Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corbin, waiting for Carl to turn down the intro.
A nice slow fade out.
Carl's actually working on a new intro for the program.
It's really hot. No, for real. I'm excited about it.
Today's program, we have, I think, a really good show lined up for you. I'm always excited, too, when we have people actually in studio, so we're quite honored today to have our guests in studio. We're speaking with Joe and MacArthur, who is a photographer, getting increasingly well-known. I got exposed to her work first at the Toronto Vegetarian Food Fair this year and was really impressed by her stuff. And so were random other people that I bumped into that said, oh my gosh, you got to go over to this table and you need to look at a book called We Animals, which is a really fantastic collection of photos about animals and also human subjects and context. So we're going to be talking about Joanne's work, not only with animals, but also with people, her travels around the world, and also what it's like to be a photographer and some of the difficult choices that she has to make, some editorial choices, ways that she negotiates that piece of technology, and what it means in the world to use her camera for different forms of activism. So I'm quite pleased to have her on the program, and I'll get her maybe just to say a quick hi.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So, but before we do that, I'll turn it back over to Carl. I should mention, too, before we hear the news, that we have some programs that have recently been archived on the website that you can download for free off animalvoices.ca. We have the show that Carl did last week, which has two different interviews from our archives on turkeys and Thanksgiving stuff. So that's up online. We also have an interview with Philip Armstrong, and we interviewed him about the postcolonial animal, which was an article that he wrote, and also about animal ethics and literature. And the interview with Michelle Pickover is online too for the group Animal Rights Africa. So check those out, animalvoices.ca. If you have any questions or comments for us, please do write us. We'd love to hear from you. animalvoices@gmail.com.
So the piece of news that I picked out today to share with everyone is something that I picked out because it's so rare to find information about this particular human use of animals, and every time I do, I try to highlight it. So I'm bringing this story to you. This is coming from The Herald in the UK, and it's about the Ministry of Defence in the UK considering ditching quote-unquote agonizing live goat experiments. This was a story from yesterday, October 15th. The Ministry of Defence is considering abandoning deep diving experiments which induce agonizing decompression sickness in live goats after complaints from animal rights groups. Live testing was suspended in March, and a review committee of six experts is now examining alternatives such as computer modeling techniques to duplicate the effect of the bends, the often lethal effect of nitrogen bubbles in the bloodstream. The tests, previously carried out by defense research company Kinetic, which is a beautiful name for a defense research company, at the facility in Gosport, involve subjecting goats to various pressures in a hyperbaric chamber. The results are used to help improve escape drills and equipment for Royal Navy personnel in case a submarine is stranded on the seabed. The effects of decompression sickness brought on by rising too quickly to the surface from the intense pressure encountered at depth include joint pain, visual disturbances, loss of balance, breathing difficulties, paralysis, and death. The animals which survived the initial test at Gosport are often used in a series of painful experiments for up to 5 years before being culled and undergoing post-mortem examination of their spinal cords and brain tissue. Goats are used because their respiratory physiology closely resembles that of humans. Hyperbaric tests with goats have been conducted since 1905. Critics say that the data collected from thousands of experiments over more than a century should be more than sufficient to justify ending live testing and provide a base for computer simulations. The French Navy has already abandoned its own live test program in favor of more humane methods. An MOD spokesperson confirmed, quote, "A number of studies reviewing the need for further use of goats in this research program are currently being undertaken. These studies take into account the MOD's duty of care to sustain the health and welfare of submarine crews and to provide them with the ability to operate safely and effectively. The teams are investigating a range of options for submarine escape and rescue and life support, including and excluding animal experimentation. Any plans for further experiments using goats are subject to the findings of this review. A spokesman for the Animal Liberation Front said, quote, "We call on Kinetic to halt these experiments and hand all surviving animals over to suitable animal protection groups." And yeah, once again, it's very hard to find information about the military uses of animals, but it's surely a large number of animals that are being used, and I just wanted to highlight that story. Back over to you, Lauren.
Thanks for that, Carl. Again, I should mention, today we are speaking with Joanne MacArthur, and in particular we're going to be talking about a book that she's in the process of putting together, that actually I have an example of what the finished product will look like in my hands. It's called We Animals, Animals in the Human Environment, and this is really only a piece, though, of a much larger, broader project that Joanne has been involved with for a long time in terms of being a photographer and dealing with a variety of subjects in a variety of different contexts, including different continents as well. So before I try in vain to describe this work, I'll get you to describe your own work maybe a little bit more and to introduce us to who you are personally.
Oh, that's a big question. Okay, well, let's start with the book, We Animals, because the title refers to the fact that we are, well, I'm not speciesist, and we are all equal, you know, squirrels, cows, elephants, sharks, people, and I don't really differentiate between all of us because we're all sentient beings and we all deserve freedom and respect. So I titled the book We Animals, and the subtitle is Animals in the Human Environment, which is, of course, everything, you know, all over the world, the depths of the seas. So there's a lot to cover in terms of photography, which means it's a really long-term project. Now, what I have here is 8 years of work, put into book format. And so it's really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of things that I can photograph.
And, I mean, for people, obviously, who haven't seen the book, if you were at the Toronto Vegetarian Association Food Fair this year, you probably got your hands on this and got a chance to browse through it. But it's quite a large book, and I know that it's not actually officially out yet, and you're sort of still in the process of trying to find a publisher or trying to find a way to finance putting out such a big, beautiful, rich text like this.
I'm about to start looking for a publisher. Yeah, it's been really well received so far, but that's because most of the audience has been in the animal community and animal rights community. Mm. So, of course, they're going to think it's good, but I have to, you know, show it to other artists. And it's such a specific kind of book, and it's not really a friendly book in all aspects. Some of the images are really hard to look at, so I imagine I'll have some trouble with publishers who want a prettier book of animals, because people like pretty pictures of animals, not necessarily all the stuff that you find in there.
Okay, well, maybe we can maybe you could describe then some of the shots. I wanted to just mention quickly too, during the break, you said there's a quote at the back, and I'll just read it. You said this is a good summary of what I was trying to do. It says, "Humans are as much animal as the sentient beings we use for food, clothing, research, experimentation, work, entertainment, slavery, and companionship."
Yeah, so that's my worldview, and I need to show that to other people. I feel like that's my, I hate to use the cheesy word, calling, but, you know, the photography and the animal rights work, it really came together, and this is my purpose, you know. I see things differently than other people, and I would like to share that worldview.
Okay, so tell us about how you see things and what kind of shots you featured in this text.
Well, zoos, we know that zoos aren't necessarily good for the animals, and that's what I believe. So I go there and photograph the animals as the way I see them. You know, a lot of people go and, oh, look, they're cute, and we're learning about tigers and animals this way, but I see them as sad animals out of their environment, and it's no way to learn about animals by seeing them in a zoo. So I, you know, photograph zoos looking very depressed, and I'm depressing looking, but there are also a lot of images in the world out there, and they're kind of blatant, and some of them are gruesome and straightforward, but what I'm trying to do is photograph them in a more artistic way, if that makes sense. I wish the people listening could see the images as I'm talking about them, but there's one image that I use quite a lot to illustrate this. It's a polar bear swimming, and it's underwater, and it's shot from the underwater viewing tank, and there's kids all looking at the polar bear, and it's a very beautiful image. It's shot in black and white. The animal is beautiful. The kids are beautiful. So there's one level and you can look at the images on that level. Oh, it's a pretty picture. It's a pretty animal. But there's always a lot of thought behind all the pictures and, well, what does this really mean? So I guess that's what the book is showing. I could have filled the book with a lot of gruesome photos of meatpacking plants and undercover stuff and slaughterhouses, and I've shot at those places, but I didn't want the book to be a gruesome book because it'll just turn people off right away, and I wanted them to be more artful and more thoughtful images than that. So that's what the book is comprised of, with a little bit of gruesome stuff thrown in too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the things that people were really drawn to, at least the stuff that I heard, was there was a sense that this was somehow a bit different than what you would expect from somebody doing sort of more, what would be, I guess, more considered classical kind of animal rights photography, that's trying to get a message across, that much more sort of gore focused mm-hmm. rather than really paying attention to the artistry and the framing in, mm-hmm. in that way. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why make that choice, then why that artistry. I think that the people that we've talked to on the show and so many other people, we constantly go back to this feeling of urgency. You know, we just got to get the images out there and then that will somehow change the world.
There are a lot of those images out there already. Slaughterhouses have been well documented, all the gory stuff, and you see those images in Meet Your Meat and those videos and PETA. I actually do shoot a lot of that stuff, and I do donate it to groups who can use them and put them on their websites and show, you know, ooh, this is what really happens. But as an artist, I think that word drives me crazy. But I think I'm just trying to take a subtler approach, and so far it's worked really, really well. If this was a book of gruesome images, people would often pick it up, look at it and say, ooh, and put it down, or I can't look at this. But people pick it up and they get really engaged really quickly because there's so many messages behind each image. There's another image in there of, I was in the Cayman Islands and I went out to a place called Stingray City to photograph the tourists swimming with the stingrays. And I went out there to photograph it because I thought it was wrong and on principle, you know, and us in, you know, invading their environment and making them dependent on the food that we give them, et cetera, et cetera. So, I have this image of a man holding a stingray, and it's at once a beautiful, loving, tender image of a man in this embrace with a stingray, but it also, it can be seen as a very aggressive image, like the way he's pulling him out of the water, and the stingray's suckers actually look like a face screaming. And yeah, the images I'm trying to show are complex and will make you think and will really draw you into each picture and have to think about the picture and the issues.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the word that kept coming to mind when I first was encountering this book was it's very layered.
Very layered.
Lots of different things going on. So,
which separates it from other kinds of animal rights work.
Let's rewind a little bit just to give more context about who you are. How did you end up getting interested in first animal issues and then why photography? Which are big questions.
Yeah, photography is, you know, it's just a tool. The camera is a tool for me to, I like people. I like individuals. I think as a race or some a species, we're vermin. Oh wait, no, not vermin. Anyway, we're bad as a group, but as individuals, I love all individuals and I'm very curious about people, and everyone has a story and everyone has a really great story. And I'm curious, and the camera was a tool to just, you know, further be able to talk to people and get their stories. So I've always taken pictures, and it's almost just something that I can use to satisfy my curiosity about the world. Mm. How I got into animal stuff. Well, I guess since I was a kid, I've always put animals on par with humans in terms of, you know, the suffering and the care we all deserve. So I've always been very, very, very engaged and compassionate with animals and wanting to look after them. And yeah, I didn't become vegetarian for many years because that was a big leap. I actually didn't know that someone could make that decision, you know, until my teens I started thinking about it. And then I went to Farm Sanctuary and was indoctrinated. Okay. That was wonderful. And so I've been vegan for about 5 years or so.
Farm Sanctuary, there's a little bit of a bio on their website about you because I guess you're one of the main photographers, one of two photographers for Farm Sanctuary. And there's a really great photo of you with much bigger hair on that website. And it talks about, in that article, it talks about you at, I believe, age 11 and hearing a dog barking. And maybe you could tell us that story.
Well, that's just typical me. the neighbor, there was a house a couple blocks over, and I could hear the dog barking in the backyard. So I went and knocked on their door and said, "Hey, can I play with your dog?" And it was just like a Shepherd Doberman mix. It was a big dog, really friendly, but barked a lot and seemed aggressive because it was just kept outside all the time. So I said, "Can I play with your dog?" And then eventually, "Can I walk your dog?" So this is the kind of thing I did ever since I was a kid, you know, with just kind of helping the animals wherever I could, or, you know, if a bird or a squirrel in distress, I would always, you know, in a very naive way, you know, try and feed them and look after them. Or, yeah.
Did people try to get you to not be that way? I mean, a lot of little kids, and I had this experience as well, sort of that you're oversensitive or,
oh yeah,
that, you know, it's just a squirrel and kind of get over it. Did you sort of feel that larger set of critiques, or were you?
Yeah, people always looked at me like I was a bit of a caution, you know, with all these views that I had and these actions that I did, and my parents thought they've always supported me, but I know that at times they thought that my views were a bit extreme. And when I told them I was going vegan, they were very, very concerned about my health and about that I was just taking things too far. But I'm still normal, and people see that I'm, you know, high functioning member of society, and that it's okay.
And Farm Sanctuary was important for you in terms of making the switch to vegetarianism.
Yeah, Farm Sanctuary is my home away from home, and I spend at least a month a year there photographing. I did two internships there, just mucking chicken poop and being with the animals. And I guess I am most myself when I'm spending time with animals and being reminded. Going there reminds me of why I do the things I do, and these are the animals right there in front of me. These are the animals that I'm trying to help.
Hmm. Can you describe that more? I like your phrase, "I'm most myself when I'm there." How are you when you're there?
Well, I guess all the city bullshit gets filtered out, and all the, you know, the little dramas we have in our lives. So I can just get centered and be peaceful when I'm hanging out with the animals, not just the farm animals, any animals.
Mm. Nice.
I'm freaky.
So I know that you've done a lot of photography at Farm Sanctuary. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience there and being there and taking those pictures and how you go about doing it? I mean, I've been there now a couple of times, and there's a lot of different animals and a lot of different stories there to be told.
Yeah. Well, I donate my undercover stuff to them. But when I'm there, shooting the animals, I just really take my time with it. I mean, sometimes I get there and they give me a long list of photographs that need to be taken for the next calendar or whatever, or the next newsletter. But when I'm doing the art stuff, I just go and I sit and I spend hours and hours. There's one image of a rabbit making a nest, and it's walking past me, and it has a mouthful of straw. And I probably spent 3 hours in that bunny barn sitting, doing nothing, and just waiting for things to happen around me, because then if I'm just sitting there doing nothing, they can be most themselves as well. Mm. And that's the best way to photograph them.
Mm. Do you find that's true with other photography as well? I mean, so many of your images, they have that real spontaneity, and you have a sense, in a way, that your subjects aren't being watched. Like, they're not as aware. Mm-hmm. How do you do that in your photography? How is there that sense of sort of, they're doing their own natural thing and you just happen to be there at the right time?
Well, it started on the level of doing street photography. And what I really... I have a few photo mentors, Lorraine Gilbert at AutoU and Larry Tell. He's a Magnum photographer. And my good friend Dave Traddles. And I've learned a lot from them. And as for photographing people, what I learned from them is that if you act like you're taking something from them, then you are. They're going to know it. They're going to feel it. When you're doing street photography, you snap a picture paparazzi style and turn your back or whatever, you are taking something from somebody. But that's not what I want to do. I want to engage with the people that I'm photographing, whether it's for my commercial work or abroad. I'll take their picture, and I don't ask ahead of time because that'll ruin the moment, but I'll take the picture, but then I'll go up to them and say, "Hey, you know, this looked wonderful. Here's this picture, and who are you, and what's your story?" And people love that. People love talking about themselves.
So people haven't been offended when you've taken a picture, or has that happened too?
Rarely, and it's some people just say no thank you, and I respect that, and then I move on. But most of the time, people just want to be involved.
Mm.
Yeah.
You mentioned someone from Magnum, and that's where you did an internship at Magnum Photos in London, and you completed that in 2000. What was that experience like? You went and you,
that was so
you
exciting.
Jumped in with both feet, I guess.
Yeah, I was just starting out as a photographer, and I knew that what I wanted to do was documentary work and dealing with social issues. So there's one Canadian magnum photographer. His name's Larry Towell, and he lives in Ontario. And I guess I'm gutsy and not afraid to be turned down or rejected. But I just called him up. I found his phone number and called him and said, "Hi, I'm a photographer, and can I go to Israel with you sometime to be your assistant?" And he was like, "No, I don't use an assistant." And he was kind of gruff. And he said, "But I do print. I do need someone to come and print for me." So I got on a bus the next day, and I spent 2 weeks at his house. And he's got an amazing photo library and amazing world experiences. So I spent 2 weeks with him and his family talking, looking at images, getting advice. And he was always challenging me on why I wanted to do things. And before I knew what I wanted to do, I saw what other people were doing, all the glamour stuff, you know, going off to war zones and getting famous and getting these great images. And I thought, okay, well, that's what I have to do too. But he taught me, no, you do what you know, you do what you love. You don't go after the National Geographic stuff. You do things that you know, and things will grow from that. And so then I did a lot of thinking about that and started photographing closer to home, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So the things I believed in and stories that I was interested in, not even just the animal stuff, but for example, my mom had really difficult labors and pregnancies with my sister and I, so I grew up being afraid of that kind of stuff. So I thought, well, why don't I explore this? Mm. So I hooked up with a midwifery center, and I spent 6 months photographing midwives and births and women who are pregnant, and I learned a lot and put out a really beautiful body of work, and they benefited from it, and as did I.
You tackle some pretty intimate subjects. I mean, that's probably one of the most intimate to be involved with. How do you get that rapport with people and also with animals? How do you capture that kind of intimacy and how do you negotiate that? Like,
I don't really know. I guess I'm just very friendly. I'm a friendly person, and I'm very genuinely curious, and people, like I like to share experiences and share their experiences. And again, like I said, people like to talk about themselves and like to share what they know. And I'm curious. So you put all those things together and, you know, in a warm way and in a comfortable way. And I'm always willing to share the images with people that I, you know, if I take their picture, I'll give them those images. And so it, all that usually makes them comfortable, and away we go. But I do maintain a certain distance. And jump in and ask questions when necessary. It's just, I don't know, a balance.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, too, that comes across really strongly, which I really admire about your work, is that I think with animal rights photography, people would consider animal rights photography, it's more like, this is a reality and I'm out there to show the world something. But you really seem to let the context and the subjects change who you are, too, that it comes back and then modifies how you see the world too.
I guess I'm always trying to learn from the people that I photograph and the animals that I photograph. And the more I photograph, the more I feel humbled. So that's good. Yeah.
I think we're going to take a short break. I wanted to, when we come back, I'd like to hear more about your undercover work.
Sure.
And some of that photography and
Yucky stuff.
Some of the yucky stuff, some of the nice stuff, and more about some of the places that you've traveled and what you've seen along the way. Please stay tuned to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. If you're near a computer and you might want to look at Joanne's stuff now, you can go to
www.joannemacarthur.com. So it's JoanneMacArthur.com.
Great. It's a great way to take a little break from work if you're at work right now. You're listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Lauren Corman, here with Carl Orzechowski, teching for us, and also in studio today with Joanne MacArthur, who's actually taking my picture right now for people who are listening live. Before the break, I said I wanted to hear a little bit more about your undercover work, and I was actually surprised that you were going to let me ask that question about undercover work, because I think, oh, does this compromise you in some way to talk about, because people Google you and they know right away that you're an animal rights person. I don't know if this helps to talk about undercover work, but I'm sure people are very curious to know what kind of work that entails and how you've gone about what kind of situations that you've been in and why you've chosen to do that.
Yeah, I guess I can't elaborate too much on this stuff. I can't say where I got images or where I took them, but there are ways of accessing places by lying. You just, you know, go in there and get the images that you need and do it with a smiling face. And yeah, it's kind of a hard one to talk about, but I've definitely shot at, you know, slaughterhouses and meatpacking plants and rodeos and getting behind the scenes access when you're not really supposed to. And it's hard. It's hard.
And you've gone to, you've looked at, you know, industries, and it seems like you've also gone to those more, the individual sites, like where people, it might have been an individual act of cruelty.
Well,
or is it mostly that sort of industry going in and looking at
it's
a
been
rodeo?
Yeah, it's been both. The industry, yes, definitely. I've got some of those photos are in the book. But I've had access to some really incredible situations because I spent last year documenting the cruelty investigators, going along with them on their work, both with the SPCA people and the Toronto Humane Society people. So it was really alarming, the things that go on in this city and in Ontario, all over the place, things that you can't imagine. And what I saw too is, you know, there I was going into it to photograph these amazing cruelty investigators and what they go through, and photographing the animals and their situations. But what I also saw was the underbelly of Toronto and the people who fall through the cracks of the system and who are living in terrible, terrible conditions. And there was one man who was wheelchair bound and an alcoholic and in absolutely terrible shape. And he lived in an apartment building. You'd never known that what was going on behind that door. And someone got called the SPCA and said, well, he's not looking after his cat. So we went there, and the situation was horrific and sad, and the conditions of his lifestyle deplorable. And here we were taking away his cat, and it was so sad. Granted, the cat needed better care, and that was the right thing to do, but leaving behind this man who it was his only friend, you know. So there's just so many horrible situations that that I photographed, and it is hard. But having the camera in front of me, it actually makes me turn off my feelings a little bit. Not completely, but in hard situations, and if I'm photographing the really gruesome stuff, I know that I have a job to do and that it's to document stuff. So that's how I'm able to function in those situations.
Yeah, I've heard other photographers talk about that too, that kind of needed distance sometimes that the camera provides. Even just having the lens in between you and the subject sometimes can provide that important distance so you can do your job.
Yeah, and I can do that sometimes. There are other people who have done work. For example, Sean Monson, who did a lot of the photography and videography for Earthlings. Mm-hmm. What an incredible person, and to be able to capture those things. And there's the one scene, I don't know if you've seen the documentary, but there's a dog that's been put in the...
I think we've interviewed Sean.
Oh, amazing.
So you should check that out, yeah.
I got to talk to that guy. But he photographed this dog being put in, I think it was him, put into a dumpster, a trash compactor. And, yeah. And the
people really remember that scene.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Now, like how, I don't know how he was able to do that, because there are certain instances where, and I'm glad he did it. I mean, that's really effective, that footage. But I don't know how I would have been able to function there and photograph that rather than pulling the dog out of the trash compactor, and how you draw the line and stuff. It's hard. And sometimes I have been known to put the camera down and scream and say, hey, this isn't right. But I can't do that when I'm doing undercover work.
Yeah, maybe we could talk about some more of those difficulties, because I know that you mentioned that it can be challenging to sort of think about that individual animal that you're not necessarily helping.
No, I'm not helping the individual animal, which is really, really, really sad. Let's say I'm in a research plant or a meatpacking plant, and here are these animals, and I'm photographing them so that I can show their story to the world. That's my goal. But here I am in front of this animal, and he's looking at me, and this animal doesn't differentiate me from all the other evil people around that are torturing and slaughtering them. And that's the hardest part, I think, is looking into their eyes. And, you know, it's ridiculous, but I do whisper to them. I do say, I'm trying to help you. I'm so sorry. And I tell them I love them and I want to help them, kind of when other people aren't listening. And I try and, you know, send out the good vibes, but essentially I am leaving that animal behind, and I am taking something from them and not helping them, and it's, you know, for the benefit of others, it's not helping them. It's real. That's probably the hardest part of my job.
Are those animals afraid of you sometimes too, because they've come to associate people with some kind of bad treatment? How have the animals actually responded to you, your presence?
Well, it's what I find even sadder is that quite often they don't respond to me with fear, but any little bit of love or attention that you give them, even though if they've been treated horribly, they'll still come and lick your hand. Having pigs in a research lab, for example, who've, you know, nothing but abuse, and being animals that have been experimented on, to go up and they just want to be loved and they just want a little bit of care, and that's just so hard.
Is it difficult to know where to draw the line in terms of shooting something that's violent with animals? Is it different than with people? Like, if there was a woman being attacked, or if there was a... is it different, I guess, shooting animals versus shooting people in terms of what you feel comfortable displaying or picturing?
I think if there was violence happening in front of me that I could stop, then I would put the camera down and do that. But going into an auction house, for example, I could kick and scream, but I would just get thrown out and the thing would go on. It's bigger than me. I can't do anything. So my role in that situation is to go and document it and show other people and show that it's atrocious and that it shouldn't be happening.
Do you feel like with the photographs that you have taken, is it frustrating sometimes because you feel like you can't tell that full story? You're always dealing with snapshots and sort of hoping that it speaks to something broader, but...
Well, when all the images are put together in the book, it does tell a whole story. Getting bits and pieces is a little bit frustrating. And, you know, you look at, okay, well, here are shots of, you know, an auction floor. Well, what can I do with that? But when you put it into the whole story of We Animals, which is why I'm working on this book and always adding to the documentary, yeah, I think it comes together.
I know that you've gone all over the world. You've been, I think, most recently to India. It sounds like that was a pretty profound experience for you. Maybe you could tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, I love India. Like my photographer friend said about India, and this is what I say now, is that when you go to India, you feel like your eyes aren't big enough. There's just so much to take in, process, and I like that. It's very stimulating. So there are lots of things going on with animals too, so it's a really good place for me to go and do my documentary work with people and with animals. I do some volunteer stuff with the Tibetan Children's Village up in the north. I photograph them every year and donate those images to them, and I do fundraising for them. And with the animals, I photograph the animals on the street and the SPCAs and all sorts of issues. And what I do with that work when I travel, I do the work, I come back and I exhibit it, and the money that I make from the exhibit goes back to that country or to whatever organization. And so, for example, with India, the money goes back to the Animal India Trust, and it's this amazing woman, Dr. Devi, and she spays and neuters street dogs in Delhi. So I've raised a bunch of money for them, and I guess that's my way of giving back. And segue into the food photography and giving back. I do a lot of commercial work, and some of it is food photography, which is often, you know, has animal products in it. And I had a real struggle with that at first. I didn't know what to do, and it, you know, it's blood money, didn't feel right, and I thought of giving it up. But it's really good money, and what I can do with that money is give back. And it allows me to donate money to Farm Sanctuary. It allows me to go to India and document animals. It allows me to do things like after Hurricane Katrina, I went down to New Orleans to help with dog and cat rescue. So that, you know, that's what I tell myself. That's how I make myself feel better, that I can give back to animals by making that money. Because if I say no to the food photography, another photographer will get that work and they're not going to donate any of it. So that's what I try and do.
I'm trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Is this then what you do primarily? Are you is it just photography?
Just photography, wow. Yeah. Lots of editorial work, lots of weddings, lots of portraits, lots of food photography. News stuff as well. I used to shoot for The Globe. I shoot for Now magazine and Canadian Geographic and all sorts of stuff. But the documentary work is my passion. And actually that people hire me for the editorial stuff for the documentary work that I do as well. And
what does that mean, documentary work? Like, how would that differ from going in and And shooting regularly.
Well, I go into a situation. People give me stories. My my editorial clients say, "Here's the story." Like most recently, there's a couple in London who adopted three kids from Darfur, and they've just got off the plane, go and spend the day with them, and they want documentary style photography. Whereas some people would go in, a portrait photographer would go in and just take a portrait of the family. But what I prefer doing when I'm working is spending some time, as much time as I can, with the subject and photographing them in their daily lives, and it's documenting them as they are, not as I would want to see them or how I think the audience would want to see them. So that's for the people stuff and the animal stuff.
Okay, I was wondering if you've ever felt attention in your work when you go overseas and then you come back and you bring pictures. And I think there's a tendency, I think, in North America to kind of want to point fingers at other countries and other people with, look what they do to their animals, is kind of, you know, part of that I think at times racist discourse that people do. So how is there a way to bring back images from other places, non-Canadian places, and bring them here and allow them to be shown with not somehow feeding into potentially that mentality that it's sort of about, you know, look at what those people are doing over there, and that's backwards place, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm never pointing fingers, and if anything, I'm often juxtaposing what happens in other places with what happens here. And I think we're the worst of all, actually, with our factory farms. I mean, we all have different reasons for exploiting animals, and I think they're all equally bad. And I don't go away trying to exploit, oh, look what this country does. I mean, we all do bad things. You know, you put all the images together and it's the same thing.
I mean, one of the things I've found with doing this program is often people that we talk to around the world, I mean, they want to come on the program because they're really interested in showing their perspective and the work that they're trying to do for animals and their own awareness-raising activities. And so that kind of potential to have a global conversation in a way about the conditions is so amazing. But at the same time, yeah, I am always worried. And so it's really interesting to hear that one of the ways it sounds like you make sense of that is by bringing out and also, as you said, juxtaposing what goes on here. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like this is a global phenomenon in terms of animals and being in poor conditions.
And partially, I am imposing my views. I know that. I mean, my point of view is that most animals in the world are being abused and we need to stop that, and I need to expose that. And then juggling that with letting the animals in the situation speak for themselves. You know, I guess it's a bit of both, but I'd be fooled to say that I'm not imposing anything.
Do you see then your role as a photographer about exposure, exposing people? What role do you see yourself serving as a photographer?
Well, I just want to share stories with, you know, people's stories with others, because everything is interesting, everything is fascinating, and with the animals, people don't think about, you know, zoos and where their food comes from, and I guess my role is just to show them that in a non-aggressive way.
Mm. Do you have any advice for people who are maybe interested in becoming photographers themselves and grappling with some of these issues as well?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's what I've learned from other people as well, is that photographers have a tendency to impose their view and take from people and twist stories. And just for me, it's important to keep it as real as possible and honest as possible. You know, there's that old quote that photos don't lie, but they certainly lie. But if you can take out the lies as much as possible, then I think you're probably doing a good thing. I mean, that's just my kind of photography, photojournalism, and I think it should be as honest as possible.
Mm. Can you say more about that? How do photographs lie?
Well, you can make things look as happy or as sad or as you want, you know? Like, and again, with the zoo thing, I could just choose a different angle or a different scenario, or photograph a monkey playing and say, oh, look, this monkey's so happy playing in the zoo. Or I could wait until it's just sitting there beating up another monkey or sitting there looking bored and photograph that and say, look how horrible it is. So it's kind of hard. I know I have the power to influence, but if you, you know, include writing in context and you know.
Well, how has your photography changed over time? You've been doing this now for quite a while. I know that you switched to digital. I mean, that's on a technical level.
That's inevitable. I was a technophobe and didn't want to, but digital is the demand now for my clients, and so I had to do that. How it's changed over the years is that I've found my voice and found what, again, there's that calling word. Give me another word for calling, because that's just so corny. My purpose. I found a way to mesh my two loves, you know.
Your bliss.
My bliss. I found my
Your
bliss.
Your vocation.
There we go. So I found a way to combine the two things that I love most and that are most, you know, meaningful to me is producing beautiful photos and sharing stories and animal rights and getting that message out. So I didn't have that for a long time. And I did photos, you know, of other things, and they're nice photos, but I think you become a good photographer when you've got something that's really important to you. As with all artists, you know, you do what you love and what means most to you rather than just chasing what you think might look really good. Mm.
So for somebody who's so passionate about animal issues and you're constantly putting yourself in these contexts, these positions where you're coming face to face with some issues that are fairly difficult, I think, for people to grapple with. Certainly for somebody who feels so passionately, it must be difficult at times to be in those places and to see those animals. Does photography help you deal with the sadness and kind of the overwhelming feelings that might come along with being in those places?
Yeah. Well, because I'm taking the photos, I know that even though it's really hard to do that and be in those situations, it's for a quote unquote greater good. And that in the end, what I'm trying to do again is not take, but give.
That's my general burnout question. I always ask people that have been doing this work for a while, any kind of animal work, it's sort of like, does this help? You know, have you had burnout? Do you avoid it? How do you avoid it? How do you deal?
I'm very social, very, very chatty social. And the minute I need anyone or need some comfort, I just rally my friends around me or go out and talk with people. I do get a little bit crazy sometimes seeing the things that I see. And then the weight of the world, and sometimes, like this one cat recently, I won't really get into that, but seeing this cat get hit by a car and how much care and love that cat deserved you know, all this emotion and going into one animal and then thinking of all the other animals, the millions of animals we slaughter every day who have absolutely no regard, no freedom, no respect. And, you know, understanding an animal like 1 million animals a day it's impossible. You can't feel that. It's just a number. But when you actually start, you allow yourself to start thinking about each chicken, each lamb. And sometimes I let myself go there. It's really, really hard. And you could say I get a little bit crazy. I feel a little bit psycho. Like I'm never going to help anything, but you know, I let those feelings go through and then I start feeling again that, well, every individual matters. And if I can help a few animals or change a few minds, then it's worth it. Like even a lifetime of work is worth it if I can help a few animals through my documentary work.
I mean, I'm interested in that question of individuals because I think that that's one of the things that the animal movements has tried to do is to emphasize the individuality of animals. And it's sort of a difficult task, I think, too, because you're trying to make those individuals also sort of speak to a broader picture when you're dealing with billions of animals. And so
it's so hard.
Yeah.
It seems impossible. But with this book and why images are so powerful, I'll use as an example the image of an eagle that's in that book. And a fashion photographer called me up once and he said, "Hey, Joe, I know you really like animals. Do you want to come along on this 3-day fashion shoot? And it's involving animals." And he just thought I loved animals and that I would like that. But for me, it was a way of, I said, "Okay, I'll come along and be your assistant as long as you let me bring my own camera." So he was kind of clueless and he's like, "Yeah, sure, do that." So he thought I'd enjoy it because I like animals, but I went knowing that I could get some really interesting documentary footage about how these animals are being used for the fashion industry. And this one image that I have of an eagle, okay, for example, the way he shot it was this really uber lit, gorgeous image of an eagle sitting on a cowboy boot and next to a skull with horns, like a bull's skull. And that looked really sexy and cool the way he photographed it. But the way I photographed it was I stood back and photographed this poor animal being rented out by a zoo that will remain nameless. They rent out their animals for a lot of money. And I photograph the animal with all the lights around, and the animal is panting, and it's tethered. And in the image they used for the fashion shoot, they photoshopped out the tether. But in my picture, you can see the tether. And the animal kept trying to fly away and get yanked back and was hanging upside down. And it was just a horrible situation. So I spent 3 days shooting this kind of scenario and juxtaposing with the fashion images that also came out at the end. So these stories are important because they can look at that image and just say, oh, it's an eagle, it's a fashion shoot. But when you give them all that context, people will just stare and stare and stare at that image and really feel it in their guts. So that's an example of the images that are in the book and what I'm trying to do.
Mm. I wonder too, like with that, with because you bring an artistic, such an artistic eye to your photographs, I wonder if in some ways it makes people a little bit less defensive. I know with some of the animal rights imagery that's out there, people can get really knee-jerk about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the photos are subtle. Most of the photos in this book are subtle and need to be looked at and need to be thought about. So, and again, like if it was all gore, that people will just turn off. And I didn't want that to happen. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's an invitation, I think, to come further into the photograph rather than...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just as I like sharing stories about people and photographing them so that they can share their stories, it's the same thing with the animals. Mm-hmm. It might seem like a relatively simple picture on the surface, but once you hear about it, it really gets you in the gut. Mm.
Is there particular subjects that you find yourself continually drawn to? Or an aspect of photography, like you're really interested in the eyes, or...
I guess I like to use a wide angle a lot because you get really close to the subject. I really like black and white. I don't know why. It probably gives an unfair romantic edge to the images. But I like doing wide angle stuff because it forces me to get close to the subject and it forces me to interact with them and they with me, be it people or animals. And it's kind of more real that way, I think.
I'm pointing to Carl because Carl does a lot of photography and I don't want to just...
Mm-hmm. I do some here and there. I don't know.
If there's a question, I can turn it over to you, Carl.
Well, my question that I was saving for a time when it might have come up more naturally was that how do you... Because I'm sure that you've got tons of shots that you could use. Mm-hmm. How do you choose the specific ones out of each set of, because you wouldn't necessarily show 10 shots of the polar bear in the aquarium. So how do you make that choice?
Well, I'm a decent editor of my own work, which is good, but not a great editor. So you really have to show your work to people whose eye you respect, and you have to listen to them. You know, if they say, Joe, I know you're attached to this picture, but it's actually crap, you have to use this one. You have to cry a little bit and then say, okay, I trust you. Because, you know, there are some really great photographers out there who just show continuously not that great work because they're attached to images and they show all the wrong stuff. So you have to listen to people who you respect.
What would make an image crap?
Well, the classic thing with me is I see a moment, it's about to happen. Let's say I miss it by a second, but I knew, like I saw it there with my eyes. And then you look at the print later and you almost had it, but you didn't. But you hold on to that image because you know you almost had it and what it could have been, you know, the potential of the picture. Yeah. So you need those outside people who weren't at the situation to say, you know what, you didn't get it. Move on.
And so with the We Animals book, is that also sort of your decision-making process? Is there more that goes into it in terms of, I want to show, like, would you sacrifice that I missed the moment by a second to show a particular practice or...
It's a balance. Some in the book, some images become stronger when they're next to other images. There's one, it's a decent portrait of a turkey, but the turkey is put next to a picture of the floor of a meatpacking plant, which is covered in blood. And then there's a quote that goes along with it. So the quote and the two images together make that page really powerful. So again, it's not just it's the quality of the image, but it's the editing. I have a really good editor and designer who helped me with the book. And she was able to take a bunch of random images and turn it into something really powerful and magical.
We have about 3 more minutes left. I want to make sure that we plug your website, www.joannemacarthur.com. And you can also go to animalvoices.ca. We'll put up a blurb about the show. And in the last couple of minutes, is there anything in particular that you wanted to share, or reflections or comments?
I think I've just said about as much as I can say about it. And if people want to give me feedback about the book, they can email me and I can send them a PDF, because it's not published yet. I want people to look at it, and I want people to say how that affects them. So anyone can email me. My email address is on the website, and let me know what they think. Critiques are great and welcomed.
Did you get a little bit of that at the TVA food fair?
Lots, but there, this was an animal rights audience, animal sympathetic audience, so the feedback was really, really great. I made 7 people cry, which was which was great, in a good way, you know, because they felt really moved by the book. Mm. But again, I need to have other people looking at it. Mm. And
you should keep a tally on your website.
7 people at the veg fair. Who else wants to cry? Who else can I make cry?
Well, I really appreciate you coming in and doing the interview with us today. I'm really curious to see this book, where it goes, and mm-hmm. what will happen with it.
Yeah, it's got a few good plugs so far, and Farm Sanctuary is supporting it, and Jane Goodall said she'd write a blurb for it, which is a huge deal. Yeah. Because she's my absolute hero. So
wow.
Yeah, so it's great that I have support from her as well.
Well, cool. Thanks so much, Joanne.
Thanks, Lauren.
I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully we'll have you back on and we'll hear more about what's happened with the book and
sounds good.
The ongoing development of your art.
Sounds good. Thanks.
You've been listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5 FM.